Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The number of South Dakota children and teenagers living in poverty continues to grow. You can find Bart Fancook's latest investigative piece for the South Dakota Newswatch at sdnewswatch.org. And he joins us now from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio. That's inside SDPB's Black Hills studio, downtown Rapid City. Bart Fancook, welcome back.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. This is a piece in South Dakota News Watch that really looks at kids on SNAP benefits. Some people call them food stamps. This is sort of a foods nutrition supplement program from the federal government. Tell me how you started looking into the statistics, and then really beyond the statistics, to what those numbers mean in a child's life. Where did the idea for this come from?
Well, I think you heard from Randall and Jack that what we want to do at Newswatch is look into issues that maybe there's a fact that you see reported, but we want to go in and tell the, you know, not what happened or what's happening, but also why. Yeah. And so I had done a piece in mid-January about low wages in South Dakota, and so that really got a conversation started, I think, across the state and also with people who reached out to me about poverty in general. And really, we're talking in a lot of cases here about working poor. And so those two stories dovetailed somewhat. And I found a Kids Count report. That's a national group that has a statewide statewide component at USD in Vermilion, and they had put out a report looking at four factors of child poverty, and three of those had been on the rise. I would note, just for total disclosure here, that the number of kids on SNAP has gone down very slightly in each of the last 5 years, but over time, when we look over a 10 to 15-year period, it's up significantly, 47% over the last, from 07 to 17, and then even when you roll in those recent decreases, it's still up 43% from 07 to last year.
Right.
But so I looked at those, and I thought, you know, who are these people, and why is this happening, and what's the bigger picture here? And so, just like any reporter, you start calling around to people who are on sort of the 30,000 foot view of the issue, and then you start to get down where the rubber meets the road, and that's talking to people who provide food to people in need, and then also some of the people who are in need, and that's sort of the whole, you know, the basics on the reporting process.
Right. And I want to get back to, you know, something you talked about, for clarity's sake, it's a significant long-term rise, but we are making progress in some areas. How are the people who have that 30,000 view looking at the intersection of those two things? Like, okay, well, this is good, but overall, you know, this is quite a battle. What are they telling you?
It was the spokeswoman for the Department of Social Services is the only person who tried to sort of put that positive spin on things. The people who are trying to feed people and help families stabilize, they're not looking at these little gains as much of a victory. They're seeing that the amount of food that's needed and being provided is going up, the needs going up, and in other programs. You look at the number of kids that are on free and reduced lunch, which is one of the poverty indicators, 42% or 145,000 kids in South Dakota that need free and reduced lunch when they're at school. So there's a lot of indicators that, yes, there has been, and nationally there's been a slight improvement in children in poverty here in the last couple of years. But when you look at the bigger picture, no one's saying, oh, we've crossed a hurdle or we've gotten to a point where we can ease up. This problem remains, and it's stubborn. That's one way a researcher put it. It's a stubborn issue.
So one of the ways that this came to the forefront just this year on this program were conversations we had during the partial federal government shutdown. And you had federal workers who were going to, or being encouraged to go to food pantries, people in food pantries seeing an uptick that they almost couldn't handle. And then also this notion of what was going to happen to those benefits. When would they arrive? They were loaded onto cards early, but there was uncertainty about when the next ones would come. A big education piece about how to make those SNAP dollars stretch. Talk a little bit, if you will, about things like the Great Recession and the partial government shutdown and events that happen that can throw a family who's already trying to figure out a very difficult daily scenario into chaos and increased vulnerability.
Yeah, I think you're right on topic on all three of those. First of all, the shutdown, the February benefits, the benefits usually go out on the 9th of the month, and participants in the program get them on the 10th. So they're able to go, and they can spread those out over the next month, or they can buy everything all at once. Those went out two and a half weeks early. So the February benefits went out in late January, and that was as a result of the shutdown. They opened the offices and got those benefits out. So now those people have already, to this point we're at now, there's been a month that's gone by almost, and so they're about another 2 or 3 weeks from receiving their next set of benefits. And we're also not talking about a ton of money. The average is about $250 a month. So
for a family, not for one person, for a family as well.
That's the average across the state. Yeah. And so now we're already sort of in a gray zone. And if there's another shutdown, that's where the real concern would arise. And people at Feeding South Dakota and other charities that help people are really worried about a rush on the need. But then you look at the families themselves, and they're the ones who are, you know, could face nights without food or you know, eating mac and cheese for many nights in a row, or, you know, the real impacts of that. So the shutdown really has a great impact on people on the margins.
Yeah. And I want to dig into deeper this notion of why it matters. You know, why it matters when kids are dealing with this kind of crisis at home, the ongoing cycle of it. What did you find out about the impact of children living in poverty?
Yeah, that's actually, if you know what you're doing, and you could Google child poverty impacts, and there have been numerous studies over the years, but they face educational challenges, social issues of stigma that kids know which other kids are on, which other kids are poor, essentially. There's health challenges. They don't receive as good health care. Child care for working parents is generally at the lowest level that they can afford. They also have anxiety, depression, stress, and these are things that manifest themselves later in life with a reduced ability to get a degree, a higher degree, and also then, as a result of that, a reduced ability to have a fruitful adulthood with a good job. So employment challenges later in life, health issues later in life. So we're really setting up, if you allow this to continue, you're setting up for a future where you're going to have adults who are in need. And the chance that children in poverty grow up to is greater for children who grow up in poverty to become poor adults and then also have poor children. So you have this generational and this multiplication factor of poverty that occurs in families. Hmm.
So Governor Noem, in her budget address, as she was laying out her plans for her budget proposal, mentioned that a lot of the money that was going to come for other other initiatives was because fewer people were using a certain social services benefits. How does what she was saying intersect with the work that you did on this piece? What did you find out?
Yeah, those two things are separate. There, you know, Medicaid funds a number of programs, and there are a few where they've seen improvements. And I think some of the improvements that they've seen, even now, SNAP money is federal money. So the state just administers that program. But the state, like with nursing homes and other programs, does a sharing. And so when you see an improvement in a program, in advance, they do revenue estimates and budget for what revenue and cost estimates. So when they estimate based on a prior year and you see a slight improvement, that's a money savings. And so they're looking at some elements of the Medicaid program where they're able to save some money. And that's the money she's shifting to help nursing homes and do a couple of other things. So they're somewhat related. You know, there's no way you can look, I think, at an issue like poverty, such a big comprehensive problem, tough to solve, tough to understand, and say, everything's headed in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. Things just don't work that way. So what she's doing is she found some areas where there's going to be some savings, and she's redistributing that money to areas in need. And I think that, in terms of nursing home and other Medicaid supported programs, there's a lot of support for that right now in the legislature.
I want to talk a little bit about who qualifies for these kinds of benefits. When we talk about poverty and kids in poverty, let's break down the numbers a little bit and say what kind of, because this is not based, and you hear a lot of people say, well, you know, parents are making a decision between food and a cell phone or health insurance and food. But this goes down to the core of income, doesn't it? So these benefits are based on income and the federal poverty guidelines. What can you tell us about that?
Well, the base federal poverty guideline right now is 20. This is a gross income, $24,300 for a family of four. So if you make less than $24,300 as a family, then you are considered poverty. SNAP benefits kick in. They give a little more wiggle room there. It's 130% of the federal poverty level. So that's about $32,000 for a family of four. And you know what you'll find is I was talking about the wage piece I did. 21% of employed South Dakota residents make under $30,000 a year, and 71% make under $40,000 a year. 40% of jobs are in the administrative support, food service, and sales arenas, yeah. And those are among the lowest paying jobs. So you've got these people who are truly working poor, that they have jobs. I thought Matt Gassen had an interesting quote that's in the piece about food stamps. He talked about, you know, who are these people on poverty? And this is his quote: poverty doesn't look like a ghetto or a third world country in South Dakota. It's here and it's everywhere. It could be the child at the playground, the neighbor coming home from work, or the parents and child you sit next to in church on Sunday. And I really found that to be true. And if I could take a moment, I wanted to share a story where that really played out for me. I went to the Feeding South Dakota pantry here in Rapid City, and I found a woman who was willing to discuss her situation, Lisa Henley. She's 39 and lives in Somerset. She's got two children, and she gets food stamps and was there doing her once every 2 month a trip through the food bank there. We talked, and she had worked at a pizza place and at a restaurant and broke her wrist and was unable to work. But she was on food stamps even with those jobs. And then as we talked, I thought, you know, you're from Somerset. I recognized her. Mm-hmm. She works at the pizza place in Blackhawk where I live. So I had seen her down there, and I had seen her at the truck stop restaurant on the interstate here. And I would see her working all the time, and here she is on food stamps. That really brought that home for me, that here's this very friendly lady trying to raise her family. I see her working all the time in my own community and where I live, and she's on food stamps. And I thought that those two things really, really melded at that moment for me.
And she has children as well.
Yeah, yep. She has two kids. And in the story, it talks about how they know they're poor. You know,
right,
They're not immune to what happens. They go sleep over and they see what other families have, and it hurts.
Well, and even if they don't go anyplace, you get to the point where, you know, you bring home, I think everyone who's a parent who's ever brought home groceries and watched your kids sort of, you know, light up at the fact that there's fresh food in the house, there's that moment that every parent has, well, now wait, we have to make this last, or don't eat all of it right now. But if you're poor, that becomes, the anxiety of that, to say, like, this food needs to last probably longer than for what many people would expect, and the consequences of, you know, I don't know, spilling something or you know, not managing your budget are pretty intense for a lot of these families.
Yeah, working stories about poverty, you really get a sense for, first of all, how lucky, you know, you are to not be poor. And then, we work hard and hopefully we deserve what we get. But that there's, you talked about the, you know, one step away from something bad happening. I've found that numerous times, you know, a car breakdown, you know, my Jeep just went off the road. It's going to be $800 to fix it. Where would I get that money if I was truly paycheck to paycheck? And then I'm out of a car. Now my car won't drive. How do I get to work? And am I in a position where the employer says, oh, that's okay, take a week to get your car fixed? When you're on the margins like that, when you're working these jobs, and the unemployment rate is low, maybe that helps. But the employer says, well, you know, I'm sorry, I found someone else to do that work. And you've gone three steps back from a one step back position of losing your vehicle. And this woman who broke her wrist, same thing. So she's still on food stamps. But where's that money from waitressing and working at the pizza place? Not coming in right now.
And with 71% of people, what was that number referencing?
71% of employed South Dakotans, 292,000 people make under $40,000 a year.
Yeah. So that 71% are starting to realize just really how close they are to, you know, I think when we talk about poverty and you start, you know, talking about the numbers, people's ears open a little bit more fully and realize just, you know, how vulnerable many people are in the state, including themselves.
And one other thing, point that I thought I found interesting in this, I didn't really get into the piece much, but I was talking to George Rokusek over at Feeding South Dakota here in Rapid, and he told me, you know, these people, they are busy trying to make it. So even if you are not working and you need to, they wait a lot, but they have to, you know, drive to Sturgis to go to a church food bank because they're short. You know, then they have to, you know, fill out paperwork, and there's a lot of waiting, and it's I think it's embarrassing, and it's got to be excruciating. You know that so it's not just people sitting home eating Cheetos, watching television. And I'm not going to say that that doesn't happen, but there's a lot of people who are really working hard. I mean, I think South Dakotans by nature are hard workers, and they want to have opportunities. Life sometimes gets in the way, but I found that interesting. That it's not easy to be poor. It's not a big you know. I'm sure there's a laziness is a factor in some situations, but not in all. Certainly not in all situations, and I wouldn't say the majority from what I've learned.